Listeners, let's just get right into it. I'm here with Brian Briskey, and I want to ask Brian, what is something about net lease real estate that might surprise us?
I would say ever-changing. Changes by the day. It's something that you think is stable, predictable. What is good today isn't necessarily good tomorrow, and yesterday is something altogether different. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a new challenge every single day.
Welcome to the Source of Commercial Real Estate podcast, where we talk to the experts in all asset classes of commercial real estate. Listen so you can grow your wealth, expand your portfolio, improve your mindset, and live an amazing life. And now, your host, Jonathan Hayek.
Welcome to the Source of Commercial Real Estate, where we talk to the experts in non-residential commercial real estate so you can grow your business, find a competitive advantage, and use real estate to live the life that you want. I am your host, Jonathan Hayek. I'm a former public school teacher who found financial freedom through residential real estate investing, and now I invest in commercial properties, preferring small industrial. Today, I'm talking with Brian Briskey of Briskey Net Lease. Brian founded Briskey Net Lease in 2010 with an emphasis on results and relationships. Brian leads the Briskey team with a client-centered approach, unified goals, and a defined vision for future success. Brian specializes in investment and net leased investment sales, and his successful track record showcases him as a nationwide triple net deal maker. Aside from investment sales, he has a long track record with other asset classes too, broadening his knowledge base. Briskey Net Lease is headquartered in Minneapolis and has added newer national offices in Charlotte and most recently Los Angeles. Brian, thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate you being here. Why don't we get started with you telling us about your background, how you got started in real estate, and what your work looks like today?
Sure. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. My background is on the unique and non-traditional side. Went to college, thought I was going to be an attorney, go to law school. My father started in the early 80s, had a resort recreational real estate company where I'm from in Wisconsin. So as a kid, got exposed to real estate deals around the dinner table, lived and breathed it, but it's a totally different kind of real estate than what I do today. You know, ultimately went home, started working with my father in my 20s and up to about 30 years old, and did recreational real estate for a period of time, was good at it, but like anything, sometimes things happen, and was fortunate enough to connect with a couple of mentors and people that exposed me to some commercial deals at an early age, or, you know, at a time when I hadn't had the experience in that area. And, you know, one deal turned to two, turned to four, turned to five, and pretty soon it sort of caught fire with me and grew the company accordingly.
Where in Wisconsin are you from?
It's up by Hayward, so northern Wisconsin is kind of a lake community.
Yeah.
Within about 2 hours of Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Okay, nice. I'm from Illinois, and so whenever I find a fellow Midwesterner, like to find out where they're from. You also mentioned the term recreational real estate. I could guess what that means, but can you define recreational real estate?
Sure. Second home, so cabins. The community I'm from is like 1,000 people, but in the summer populations, it spikes to significantly more than that. And it has gotten to be somewhat of a hotbed in terms of work from home. People want to have a larger cabin, larger second home, somewhere they can go and sort of, you know, work and enjoy the flex environment and be at the lake.
Nice. Cool. So you are the founder of Briskey Net Lease. Will you describe Briskey, the kinds of deals that you do, who your clients are, those types of things?
Sure. We're really entrepreneurial. I've always been that way, client specific. So I believe that if you take care of a client over time and do what they need, sometimes it's a little difficult and it will lead to some easier, better things down the road. In terms of our deal makeup, I would say over 50% of our deals are institutional, REIT business, maybe 60%. So that ebbs and flows with the market. Some years they're buyers, in a year like this and last year they're more sellers. So we, you know, run dispositions for them in a variety of different sectors. Mostly retail, I would say 60-65% retail, with the rest a smattering of industrial and, you know, other asset classes. Some private groups. I mean, actually this year, from a buyer's perspective, the private groups are way more prevalent, just because of the deal velocity being lower and cost of capital being higher for a lot of the bigger groups.
So the net lease brokerage space, it's kind of a crowded space. And so I want to ask you about your strategy and your competitive advantage. You kind of touched on it earlier with talking about being entrepreneurial, client-centered. Can you tell me a little bit more about what is your competitive advantage?
First of all, we got a really good team. Most of the support team has been with us for a long time. Really smart people, collaborative. I have always believed in operating with more support staff than most brokers. So as it pertains to my personal volume, it helps to have more people working our deals, helping. And as far as the client's concerned, I would say be super efficient. We can turn BOVs and different marketing deliverables as fast as anybody. And, you know, just try and prioritize outwork and differentiate, because there are a ton of brokers and a ton of firms. People have a lot of choices. I always believe in just starting with one deal. Let us show you with one that we're different, and it will lead to more and more and more. And I believe if I were to look back over the last 2-3 years, we're above 90% on every deal being a repeat buyer or seller. So we're really high in that capacity. Some other brokers are, you know, grinding out on the phones and looking for, you know, one and dones. That's not us.
If you're doing 90% of your business from repeat clients, I think that says a lot about how you all operate and how you treat your clients.
Yeah. We like to think so. Yeah.
So Brian, real estate, commercial real estate has been on a wild ride for the last 4 years, and the net lease world is no different. So can you give me kind of a 30,000 foot view? We're towards the tail end of first quarter 2024. What are your overall impressions of where we are in the net lease market right now?
I would say I'm a little more pessimistic than most brokers. Really choppy, really in choppy waters. I would say the last 6 months is probably the toughest that I've seen in the last 10 years. Just the rapid run up in interest rates, inflation, froze a lot of parts of the market. So it really forced us to do deals a little differently, to let some sellers just be, than to fight it too hard. In terms of today, I think we're on a path of probably 6 to 12 months of the same, more of the same. I feel pretty good about it though, because I believe that the past 6 months have really taught us how to transact in this market better than doing it right out of the gate. So we pivot really well. You take what the market gives you. You don't force the hand of your clients. There's a lot of sellers that just aren't ready to sell, don't want to sell, or their expectations are just too far away from reality. So but waiting around for the market to just snap back is a mistake, in my opinion.
You talked about a really high percentage of your business being from the institutional world. So I'm really interested to get a better handle how they're reacting to the current market. There has been a narrative over the last 6 to 12 months that a lot of institutional players have just been pencils down, and they just wanted to wait for more certainty, and they just weren't doing anything. So I'd like to ask if you're still seeing that, if you're seeing a lot of your institutional clients being net buyers or net sellers, or if they're still just sitting on their hands.
Yeah. Good question. You know, I think pencils down could be a couple things. A lot of times it's them setting pricing at a level that the market just isn't accepting. We try and really have a good handle. I'm on the phone a lot with different groups, just have a handle on what folks are doing. We talk together, we collaborate, you know, what are your targets? What do you guys see in the next quarter? And there's stuff happening. It's just a matter of going group by group, and everybody's a little bit different. Some folks are sellers. Some people are more aggressive sellers. Some people we have listings out there for that are just kind of hoping we find that cash exchange buyer or somebody that will pay up a little bit for a specific site. And, you know, they don't push us too hard as long as we're on the same page with, if it sells at this kind of number, we're going to move it. Otherwise, we're not a seller. So,
yeah. And those cash buyers do happen. I mean, there's all kinds of people in different situations, and you never know who's going to have a 1031 that they have to execute on. And you might just have that perfect site that buyer's looking for. I want to ask you about 1031 buyers. My assumption would be the majority of your private clients, the non-institutional buyers, would be 1031 buyers. Am I accurate in assuming that?
I mean, a good percentage. I wouldn't call it the majority. We get a lot of investors just, you know, looking to place capital, but definitely above 25%.
Okay. I see net lease as sort of a lot of private buyers are looking to transition. They had some more active real estate or a more active business, and they're looking to transition to something more passive. And so they're selling multifamily or something that's been more active and hands-on, and they're looking for mailbox money. Has the lack of activity in the rest of the commercial world, do you think that has trickled down to reduced activity in the net lease world as well?
You know, inventory is a little funny. I mean, it depends on price point. So, you know, if you look at exchange buyers and you know, you mentioned the type of group coming out of apartments, multifamily, really common. It's a profile that we work with a bunch. You know, lack of bigger activity. I think most of the problem with the market is just sellers not coming to meet, you know, market values. So if the sellers aren't coming, and there's way fewer exchange buyers, you know, right now anyway. So I think with, you know, fewer institutional buyers, fewer exchange buyers, doesn't feel all that different as it comes to, you know, one of these smaller groups going out to try and place some dollars. I mean, we just met with a group that was looking to place, you know, mid $2 million, and we were actually surprised at the lack of stuff. You would have thought there was more, but when you start talking about quality, under rented, good credit, good real estate, the right states, there was less than we had hoped.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because that seems to me, the mid $2 million, that to me is sort of a classic or a common 1031 buyer, or, you know, a high net worth person looking for some passive real estate. So somebody that wants to buy a Burger King or, you know, something like that, a car wash. And so you're saying that when you drill down into getting a quality tenant in a good location with a great lease, the inventory that fits that profile is pretty low, huh?
Yeah. Lower than expected. I mean, if you want to take some risk, if you want to go into some different states or some tertiary markets or non-performing, you know, units that are just kind of in earlier stages of operation or something like that, maybe. But for the quality stuff, I mean, as the market started to soften, we got the call frequently like, oh, we want investment grade, short and midterm deals. We think we're going to get a discount. And those discounts never really came. So the market in a lot of ways is super fragmented, and some things have moved more than others. Some developer stuff has moved faster just because their cost of capital went up, their pipelines went up, and, you know, with that comes the necessity to move some things. As private sellers, you know, absent of a life event or renewal, both from the tenant side or our loan side, a lot of them just don't have to sell.
So I want to ask you about sellers. That was going to be my next question, is if you're seeing distress from any sellers. I know in some asset classes, there's certainly distress. We don't typically associate net lease retail with having distress because it's always such a long-term play, usually such a long-term play. So with any of the sellers that you're talking to, what are their motivations for selling? Are you sensing any distress?
In some cases, yes. I mean, we try and advise, you know, for the long term. So, you know, with different folks, maybe this sector is a little flooded right now, such as drugstores. There's a lot of drugstore inventory out there. So if, you know, we've got a good unit under contract right now, it makes some sense for that individual seller to maybe transition into something else. He doesn't own that much retail net lease, and maybe we'll chop it up into a couple of other assets that, you know, have a little more term, have some rent growth, just diversify them a little bit. In terms of pure motivated sellers, you know, the loan renewals, if any loans are going to reset, if we have a shorter or midterm deal where they don't want to stick around and have to renew the tenant or get negotiated by the tenant, whether they're going to stay, whether they're going to leave. Those are kind of the common, I guess, motivations. But by and large, a lot of people in this market are kind of content.
And certainly if you did it the right way on the front end, like by aligning your financing with the lease term, you know, hopefully you're not in a situation where you're trying to sell a property with 2 or 3 years left on the lease and you've got a loan coming due. That would be a worst case scenario. In my mind, that'd be, you know, a worst case scenario right now. You mentioned kind of the changing of the market, and, you know, 24 months ago, when we were I was talking to people in the net lease world 24 months ago, and things were banging. It was a really good time to be in the net lease world about 2 years ago. We're coming out of COVID. There was the flight to quality line that we kept hearing. A lot of investors were loving these single tenant net lease retail deals. Maybe you're having these conversations. Let's say somebody bought one of these deals 24 months ago at a record low cap rate. And now they're looking at valuations and they're like, oh, cap rates have risen quite a bit. How are you advising, or what are those conversations like with those sellers that are like, man, I've just maybe lost a ton of value in this asset I bought 2 years ago?
Yeah, I look at it two ways. I mean, I've had these conversations recently, and most of them have been on dollar stores just because historically we've sold a ton of dollar stores. If they got good debt, good long-term debt, they're not in a problematic situation. So with both of them, they had good debt, and they were sticker shocked when I told them an exit cap rate. So I said, you know, honestly, you either just sit tight and hold, or we have to take a look at what you can replace it into. If you feel like we can take a little bit less to replace it into something better, something with, you know, the dollar stores historically have flat rent. So in, you know, higher interest, inflationary times, it kind of sucks to hang on flat rent leases. So maybe you want to get into stuff with annual rent bumps or pick urban sites where if the tenant goes away, you have more backfill opportunities. So we look at ourselves as more advisors. So I don't want to, you know, push people into doing something they don't want to do. We want to take a long-term approach and, you know, make sure we're on the win side of things, not just during the deal, but after, and hopefully they come back to us for more.
I can tell, Brian, that you see yourself as an advisor from the first minute we started talking, because you have a fairly pessimistic view of, you know, the next, you admitted the next 6 to 12 months of net lease retail. And you don't often hear people in the commercial real estate world talk with such honesty. And so to me, that's a very attractive characteristic of a broker advisor, because there's so many brokers out there that are just looking for the next deal. They're transactional. They're looking for the next listing. They're looking for the next contract, whatever it is. And they're not looking to help their client make good decisions, but they're looking to move product. And I think it's notable to hear someone like you talk with such honesty and see yourself as an advisor and just, you know, be really honest with your clients about, you know, if you've got good debt and you've got a good lease and a good tenant, there's no reason to sell right now. You know, you only realize those losses if you sell. Otherwise, it's just a paper loss. And, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years when that lease comes due or comes up for renewal, you know, we have no idea what the market's going to be doing. And so you don't realize your losses unless you sell. And so I think, you know, you offered some great insight there. Brian, I want to ask you about a certain sector of net lease retail. I don't know if you're involved in it, but pharmacies. Pharmacies have been making some big headlines over the last, I don't know, year or so, and they're having a tough moment right now. And so will you tell us just a little bit about your perspective on what's happening with pharmacies and what do you think the future is of these national pharmacies like Walgreens, Rite Aid, and CVS?
Sure, sure. Yeah, we're really active with pharmacies. I'll just start by saying I'm a believer in brick and mortar pharmacy. I personally like going to my local pharmacy, having the option to buy things in addition to just prescriptions there. But the space is under attack. I mean, it's been under attack for a while. Probably too many pharmacies. It was the old safe net lease investment 10, 15 years ago, where folks in exchanges felt like buying a Walgreens or a CVS was the absolute place to go. The Walgreens credit downgrade shocked the market a little bit. I mean, I would say shocked the market in terms of put a lot of sellers on the market. So if you watch the inventory, the cap rates are rising on those things and stuff isn't selling and there's more and more of them. So it's a lot like theaters, in my opinion. They're not going away, but I think there's consolidation coming. There is a shrink in the footprint overall for these companies. But good real estate, well-rented, good performing, I think is going to be around for the long haul. So,
yeah, I wonder. I'm a value-add investor. I'm always looking for opportunities. And so I remember, you know, driving around the suburbs of Phoenix and the places around Tampa and St. Petersburg. And you drive down these main stretches and every mile, seemingly in some areas, every mile, one corner there's a Walgreens, one corner there's a CVS. And you go another mile and it's the same exact thing. And, you know, there a lot of us were thinking, man, oh man, how can these pharmacies survive? And it turns out they might not. Do you think there's opportunity in some of these assets? Because a lot of them are really well located.
Sure,
it's quality real estate. So do you think there could be opportunity with just some of the real estate?
There is. We have a broker on our team that's been working the Rite Aid bankruptcy really hard in terms of assets that are coming empty, getting rejected, or just they've negotiated them down for lower rent. So there's developers, just different people looking for opportunities. It all comes down to the price. The problem is if the rent's super high, it doesn't make sense to redevelop, or it's really going to be a painful redevelopment for that owner that paid $4, $5, $6, $7 million for a Walgreens, and the dark value might be closer to maybe 2 or 3. So super potential. The boxes are not perfect. I mean, you can put dollar stores in them, a few other things. But, you know, good corners are always going to have some good inherent value.
I'm wondering if you or your team are seeing any patterns or envisioning any potential redevelopment plays or alternate uses for these buildings. You know, you had mentioned the dollar store, and I've seen some like Walgreens being subleased to Dollar Tree, some of those plays. Is there a lot of them are kind of large buildings? You know, they're between 10 and, I don't know, 16,000 square feet. Do you see any opportunities for adaptive reuse, splitting them up into multi-tenant properties? Are you seeing any patterns like that?
No patterns, but I think it's coming. I like the multi-tenant idea just because it's tough to find that total specific use that matches a Walgreens store. So I think the multi-tenant, we've seen a few clients, and I'm not just talking drugstores, but we've had a few clients buy, you know, big empty restaurants, things like that, turn them into multi-tenant centers and do pretty well with it. So, you know, if you can pencil it out, get it for the right price on the front end, the facilities, a few of these drugstores have rough condition. You know, we've seen some of them with asbestos and we've seen some of them with bad roofs and some of that. So, you know, at the end of the day, you have to take a look at what you're paying and how much you're going to have to put into it to make it rentable from good quality national tenants.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I went through a couple years ago, I went, you know, went looking pretty seriously for a drugstore. And some of the leases on some of these drugstores are insane. I mean, some of them, you know, originally had, you know, a 20 or 25 year term with tons of options. And a lot of them are triple net or even absolute net leases. And so, like you alluded to, there could be some deferred maintenance on some of these. And some of these properties still have leases that go out for, you know, a decade or more because they, some of the lease terms they signed were just ridiculous. And not to mention what you alluded to earlier is these drugstore tenants were notorious for paying really high rents. And so you could have, you know, kind of a retail, you know, just a retail box priced at, you know, $300 to $400 a square foot, you know, based on NOI. And, you know, for a lot of other uses, those numbers just don't pencil. And so, you know, the seller is looking for a cap rate based on income and a buyer is like, man, the real estate isn't worth that much. And so it just puts people in a really tough position. So we're talking about opportunities, and you had mentioned earlier about getting phone calls of people looking for opportunities and distress. And I'm wondering if you're seeing, either with pharmacies or any other asset classes or locations, are you seeing opportunities in the net lease world for value add buyers, somebody looking for deals, looking for value? Does anything like that exist out there?
Yeah. I mean, there's value at a price. So, you know, even in the drugstore side, if, you know, the price is right, if the real estate's right, even with some shakier things going on corporately, there's opportunity. And we're starting to see these sellers move more and more toward being aggressive. So that's a positive. You know, other opportunities, you know, a couple of sectors I like, casual dining, the right casual dining. I'm not talking QSR, but just, you know, your kind of middle America sit down restaurant that operates well with good performance on the unit level, good real estate, not over rented. I think there's some opportunity there. Fitness, the right fitness, I think. You know, we went through all the issues with COVID and are people going to go out again and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the right fitness, the right operators, I like. You can get a little bit more of a value there than in some things. And furniture is another one. We've done a ton in furniture. So furniture is a sector we've worked for a long time. And, you know, the average person sometimes gets a little scared with furniture as a sector in, you know, tough times, but the brands that have been around a long, long time, they're here to stay, I think, for the most part, especially the ones that are privately held and can find some opportunities.
That furniture idea is really interesting. I think I saw a LinkedIn post from you. Now that you mentioned furniture, I think I saw a post from you in the somewhat recent past about looking for these furniture assets. And is that because it's somewhat e-commerce resistant? Because someone looking to go buy a couch or a dining room set likely wants to sit on it and feel it and measure it and see how it looks in person instead of just buying it online. Is that kind of why it's a nice tenant to have?
Really difficult to buy furniture online. I mean, it can be done, and some of those bed in a boxes, yeah, you could do all that stuff online. But yeah, it's an experience. It's something that consumers want to touch and feel and you know, be local with. I was talking more from an opportunity as you know, the economy goes up and down. A lot of times investors believe that the consumer pulls back on furniture buying in those times. So I think because of that, there's some opportunities from a cap rate perspective versus, you know, when things are red hot, when housing, you know, the new builds are way, way up, furniture gets more aggressive.
Yeah, really interesting. Really interesting. Brian, Brisky Net Lease is expanding. You've had tremendous success. You clearly treat your clients well. You know what you're talking about. You've recently expanded to Los Angeles. I want to ask you just a question about building and growing your brokerage. Can you identify a few things, whether it's concepts or just or strategies, the way you look at business, the way you look at brokerage? What are a few things that have been instrumental in growing Briskey Net Lease?
Just, you know, I really take a people first approach. I mean, it has to be the right fit. You know, a lot of people in the industry are in the mass recruitment game, which is kind of the opposite of what I believe in. I'd rather be thoughtful with each, you know, individual hire, each individual client, and make sure it's the right fit, and hopefully better things happen. Treat people like you want to be treated. You know, not that difficult of a concept, but our industry's gotten away from it. Yeah, and with the growth, like-minded stuff. So whether it's like-minded clients, like-minded brokers, teammates, employees, you know, I kind of believe in wins or nobody wins. So it's if it doesn't benefit both parties, it's not a fit. So,
Brian, this has been a great conversation. I always appreciate getting updates on the net lease world from people that are in the trenches. Is there anything we haven't talked about today that you feel like listeners should know about the net lease space, about Briskey, about you, anything else that we haven't touched on?
Yeah. I mean, we're in a big growth. I mean, we feel like, you know, the downward market is good for us. We love LA. We think it's probably going to be our largest market from a brokerage perspective. We're also in Charlotte. Great market. Isn't as large, but tons of development. I mean, everything we seem to do in the Carolinas is we're successful. The demand's high. Investors know about it. Jobs, housing, all the above. So we're excited about the markets that we're in. In terms of the market itself, I mean, there'll always be opportunities. So, you know, being willing to work with a broker to help uncover the right opportunities for you in any given market. I mean, I think that's what our team's all about, trying to find great results for our clients. And if not today, we'll come back to us at a different point in time. And hopefully we can advise them.
Brian, this has been a great conversation. If listeners want to connect with you, learn more about you and Briskey Net Lease, where would you like to send people?
Sure. Just our main website, briskey.com, briskey.com. And our team's really easy to get a hold of. All the brokers are, you know, dialed in and super responsive. So we'd love to hook you up with one of them if you have a need.
This is Brian Briskey. His brokerage is Briskey Net Lease. Brian, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Listeners, thank you so much for listening and joining us. We clearly love talking about commercial real estate, so feel free to reach out to either one of us if you'd like to talk. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, take care.
This content is for entertainment and informational purposes only. It is not financial advice, and it is not an invitation to buy or sell real estate or make any investment decisions.